The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So we have some visiting monks here this week who are going to be doing this week-long retreat. Many of you are here for it, and some of you are here for the first time today, and nice to see everybody. But for those who are going to be here for the retreat, we have an opening introduction tonight at 7 o'clock, which you're warmly invited to come to, and I'll be introducing all the monks, some of whom you know, some of you may not know them. But in the meantime, we have a talk. I was reading an article by Bhikkhu Bodhi the other day, and I came across this little sutra he talks about. A young god, a young deva, comes to the Buddha with a question. A deva is a being from one of the heavenly realms. You can see it either as a place separate from us, where somebody might go after death if they've lived a good life. They might go to one of these blissful heavenly realms, supposed to be really nice, really nice. No suffering, bliss, wonderful, you know. And you can also see it in terms of our own world, our own state of mind. Sometimes it's heavenly, sometimes, you know, things are going really well. Or you might see people you think have this wonderful existence, they have, you know, wealth and youth, and they're beautiful and they're famous and all that stuff. And it seems like a heavenly realm. But it's not that simple, as we've all seen. So this young deva, this young god, comes to the Buddha from this wonderful heavenly realm and says, always frightened is this mind. The mind is always agitated about unarisen problems and about arisen ones. If there exists release from fear, being asked, please explain it to me. So here's this young deva from this heavenly realm having a rotten time. He's worried, he's afraid, he's anxious all the time. And even in the heavenly realms, there is anxiety, fear, and worry. Well, it sounds just like us. Mind always frightened, always worrying about things unarisen, things that haven't happened yet. Or about things that have already arisen, things that are going on. Constantly, like always anxious, the mind always anxious, never at peace, never really still. Doesn't mean we worry continuously all the time, but it keeps coming up. We get worried about stuff. We wake up in the night with a nameless dread, or we're worrying about, you know, all the thousands of things. This question came up 2,500 years ago in the time of the Buddha. And of course, long before that, people were worrying. So this is nothing new. We're not the first worriers. People have been doing it for a long time. We have expertise now at worrying. We're prone to fear and worry. You know, it just seems to be part of our nature. The body is fragile. Life is uncertain. I talk about this quite a bit because actually it arises of people a lot of the time. And especially nowadays, there's so much fear, uncertainty, anxiety, weird things going on in the world, horrible things going on in the world. It seems like it gets worse and worse. But I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's just the same it always is, always was. It certainly looks worse, especially as we can read about it, you know, much more easily about all the awful things that happen. In 100 years ago, you wouldn't know about half the awful things that happened. People are now afraid of acts of terrorism and violence, nuclear war, all this, you know, more intolerance and hatred. It's interesting, though. Bhikkhu Bodhi wrote this article 20 years ago in 1997, and he talks about the exact same things. Violence, drug addiction, terrorism, fear, worry, all the things that we have now. It's exactly the same. 20 years ago, he was talking about it. before 9/11, before any of that. Now it's still the same old stuff. Maybe worse, but I don't know. I hear now there are de-stressing centers for people to go to. They used to have churches, but now can't get in the churches anymore because they're all locked. So people have de-stressing centers to go to, and there's all kinds of, you know, I looked up de-stressing on the internet this morning. There's all this stuff. You can have, there's tips about it. You can go to seminars about it. You can go to retreats about it. You can go to all kinds of things to learn to de-stress. Well, this is nothing really new. And our way of de-stressing is to meditate. Yes, it helps. But actually, you know, we may all be worried about nuclear war and global warming and all those things, but I think, in fact, that most people worry more about the personal things of their lives. They're more in your face. You're more worried about your family not having enough money than you are about nuclear war, actually. They say that people are more afraid of public speaking than they are of nuclear war. It's interesting, isn't it? I think that's a wonderful statistic. So we worry about those things. It is much more immediate, our own actual concerns in our lives, our families, our kids, our jobs, our, you know, how am I going to retire with the little money I've got, which is shrinking, and all this kind of stuff. That's more stressful in many ways. And yet the other, the global kind of stuff, is there in the background also. So the Deva world, as I said, it can be seen as a sort of heavenly realm, but it can also be seen as something in our own world. The people we see, or we imagine we see, who have all this sort of wealth and privilege and youth, and they're beautiful, and they may be famous, and they can do what they want, and all this stuff. You know, it always looks wonderful, especially if you don't have those things. But it doesn't really keep worry and anxiety at bay, you know. It doesn't prevent old age, sickness, and death. It doesn't prevent impermanence. Nothing prevents that. But they seem like they're bullocks against bulwarks. Whatever. How do you pronounce that word? Anybody know? Bulwarks. I'm going to call it bulwarks. Anyway, whatever they are, bulwarks. Thank you. I don't want to call it bullocks. So they're sent to sleep. Whatever it is, range your bullocks against impermanence. But all these things, you know, money and health and all that kind of stuff, seem like it's keeping all that stuff out, and it's not. So the Buddha's response to this young Deva, he says, not apart from awakening and austerity, not apart from sense restraint, not apart from relinquishing all, do I see any safety for living beings. This is very direct. They ask the young Deva's asked him a direct question, and he gives him a direct answer. You know, you can't have safety apart from awakening, austerity, sense restraint, relinquishing everything. This sounds pretty daunting. Oh my God, I've got to give up everything. You know, this sounds more fearful than having all the stuff and worrying about it. Pretty stark. But actually, it doesn't mean we had to become ascetics and, you know, wander the earth in rags and bare feet. It means relinquishing clinging onto things in the belief that they will make us feel happy and safe. It's not the things. It's thinking they're going to make us happy and safe. That's the problem. Looking to outside things for happiness and security. It's not the things themselves. There's nothing wrong with being, you know, having happy relationships and being young and healthy. Of course not. And even having wealth, there's nothing wrong with it. It's when we invest our happiness in these things, then we're bound to have problems because we're looking in the wrong place. And they don't last forever. And this was true in the time of the Buddha, and it's true now. When we invest our happiness in wealth, we'll never have enough money. We always need more. You know, we're never going to be happy. We're never going to feel secure. We want to keep amassing. And it's like that with everything, with health. If we're, you know, endlessly eating healthy food and running and exercising and doing things, well, people get sick and die anyway, you know. You have these old guys who've lived on, you know, been chewing tobacco for 1,000 years and drinking their whiskey every night, and they're fine at 90 years old, and they have somebody else who's been living this really healthy life, and they die at 36. You know, you can't actually prevent things from happening. You cannot keep impermanence at bay, and there's no sense in putting one's worry into that, putting one's faith in any of these things, because they'll let us down. Doesn't mean living a healthy life is deadly, but it's just not the answer. So that's why the Buddha talks about dealing with this constant, like always anxious is the mind, dealing with this constant anxiety from the inside out, not looking to the external things, but working on it from the inside. Austerity and sense restraint. It does sound kind of, you know, I don't know about this. But it means not overindulging ourselves. And whatever our situation, if we're monks, it means one thing. If we're lay trainees, it means something else. However we may overindulge ourselves or invest too much in something, to restrain that a bit, to see where I'm investing too much of my energy, time, attention in something, whether it's food or sex or shopping or whatever, you know, watching movies. Something in us knows, you know, I could do a bit less of this. It's not really very good for me to be, you know, doing quite so much of this. Maybe I'll just try a little restraint. It's not going to kill us. It actually is liberating, because then we can see I don't have to have so much of this to be happy. I can actually free myself a little bit from it. I don't have to be doing this all the time. My security does not depend on Netflix, you know, or whatever it might be. And so that helps us with the anxiety and stress. Right there, just seeing this little bit of restraint. It's okay. It doesn't kill me. And it doesn't have to be some kind of grand thing. Just to practice a little restraint and keep doing it is much better than trying to make some great gesture and then not doing that. Remember, 1,000 years ago, I tried going on some kind of a brown rice diet when that was fashionable. And I ate ground up raw brown rice for breakfast, not very much of it, brown rice for lunch, brown rice for dinner. By the end of a day and a half, I rushed out and I bought cookies and jam and all kinds of stuff I never normally would eat, you know. Well, this clearly does not work. I'd have been better off if I had just been a bit more moderate. It was ridiculous. But it taught me something. It was hilarious. Anyway. Back to the Buddha. Relinquishment. He talks about relinquishment. Not apart from relinquishing all, relinquishing everything, do I see any safety for living beings. And again, it sort of seems a bit like, you know. But relinquishment doesn't mean giving up everything. It means letting go of grasping at things, clinging on to things, holding on to them and trying to keep them here, you know, not letting them change, disappear as things will do. Relinquishing our grip on the things that actually cause us suffering. You know, trying to grip onto things causes suffering because they will break, disappear, fail us, be gone, you know. People, they come and go, actually. We know this, and to cling on causes suffering. We can love people, we can enjoy things, we don't have to get rid of things. It's a matter of relinquishing that grip, thinking it will make us happy, thinking they will make us feel happy and safe. That's the thing. To have the things is fine if you can hold them with a light hand and not a tight grip. Greed, hate, and delusion, the three poisons, relinquishing our grip on these. The grip on greed, you know, it causes us worry. When we want, really, really want something, we worry. Really, really want this thing. We're not happy. And then, if we don't get it, we're disappointed. If we do get it, we can still be disappointed because it's not as nice as we thought it would be. And then we want something else. And it's a constant, you know, turning wheel of anxiety, constant anxiety, always wanting. Hatred and anger, you know, a terrible suffering. And when we cling on to hatred and anger, It poisons us if we are resentful or embittered, stewing on something that happened years ago or something that happened 20 minutes ago. It's like stabbing ourselves with a knife. It's a terrible suffering. And there's such worry and anxiety and all the wars we're having. What is it? Hatred and fear and anger. It fuels all that. Terrible suffering, terrible fear and worry for people. Acts of terrorism and violence that have nothing to do with the victims quite often. People are afraid of these, all through hatred and delusion. Delusion, the other poison, or ignorance. And in particular, the delusion of being a separate self, a separate me, separate from everybody and everything else. Here I am in the universe by myself, and everybody else is out there. That's the sort of extreme of it. But we all have this idea, I think, that we're somehow separate from other beings. And if we could see that we're actually just a part of everything and everybody, and there's nothing separate, it would certainly help. Because this idea of being a separate self is the root of all the problems. If I didn't think, if we didn't think I'm a separate me and my views are correct and I'm the right, I'm the center of the world and I've got to protect this me and I've got to protect all my stuff and my, even my loved ones. It's a suffering, actually, because we're constantly worried. And if we could relinquish that, we wouldn't be anxious and afraid of anything. We wouldn't worry about death because we see that we're actually part of life. We come into being, we live our life, we get old, we die. It's been going on for millions of years, there's nothing wrong with it. But when it's me in my life and my sickness, I think, oh goodness, this is not right, But of course, it's just part of life. And we do our best with sickness and old age and all that. And yet still, we can't keep it at bay, really. To know that actually people care about us, to be able to believe that, to allow that shell to come down, to allow compassion in and allow compassion out, If we could all do that, what a different world it would be. How different we would be to allow ourselves to believe that actually we are part of everything. We're part of everybody, that we can truly care about each other because we're not different. We're not separate. We're not wildly different from each other. We all have our own little, ideas, views, opinions, experience, history and all that. But we're not separate. There really isn't anything to fear in another person. Even when they threaten us, fundamentally, there is not a difference. Imagine being able to see that, when we're physically threatened, to be able to see that there's no difference between them and me. That would be something. And to be able to see this unreality of the separate self is the basic awakening that the Buddha is talking about. And that's why he said to the young Deva, awakening is essential if we want to find true freedom from fear and worry, the true safe place. Awakening to our true nature, entrusting ourselves to that which contains everything and everybody. To awaken to that. Well, this sounds pretty big. Awakening, that's for Buddhas and people. But actually, when we meditate, keep to the precepts, simple training, just practicing kindness, we are working on our awakening. We're converting our three poisons of greed, hate and delusion into compassion, love and wisdom. We're doing it now. We're working on it in this very body and mind right now. It's not something off in the future for other people wiser than me. It's for us. We're weakening our bonds of grasping and clinging onto the things that make us feel safe, or the things we thought would bring us happiness. We're weakening our attachment to these things. We're weakening our fear, actually. When we keep to the precepts, we're less fearful because we know we're doing the right thing. We know we're doing something that's right. And sometimes we do the wrong thing. And sometimes we do the wrong thing with the best of intentions. But we're trying to do what's good. We're trying to live the best life we can. And that helps immeasurably with fear and anxiety, because we're not trying to get something at the expense of other people and so forth. So how does this work on ourselves? Help our frightened and suffering world? You know, we have this, all this global stuff we mentioned earlier. Well, how does this work on me help everything else? And does it actually help? Well, yes, it does. We say this over and over. Yes, working on ourselves helps everybody. When we do our best to deal with our own greed and anger and fear, it helps everybody. It's an antidote to that general heap of, we're not adding to that huge heap of greed and anger and fear, we're applying a little antidote there. It kind of seeps in, you know, and sort of weakens that pile a little bit. When we're kind to somebody who's angry, we're adding an antidote. Or when we're generous and offer something to somebody rather than grab it for ourselves, there's an antidote to our greed. Or when we're just relinquishing our fear and suspicion of people, we're relying on our antidote to that level of fear in our world. Just not acting on greed and fear and hatred, but just letting that little antidote seep in our little ways, in our lives, as we can. It does help. And we know, you know, when somebody is kind to us, we're more likely to be kind in response or kind to somebody else. Somebody gives us something, we're grateful. And we were generous in return or generous to somebody else. When somebody is patient and when we've lost it, you know, it helps us to regain our balance and not just get angry again. It's really helpful in these little ways to apply that antidote. I think it's a wonderful thing to remember. Not seeing other people as separate, as I said, treating other people as just like us. It's a gift to do that. So the Buddha's teaching to this young deva 2,500 years ago, it's something we can practice now, today, in many ways and on many levels. It's just for us. Restraint of selfishness. Restraint from just relinquishment of clinging to my view. My little view, which has to be right. It's all the practice of awakening, just relinquishing that grasping to my opinion or my stuff, my, you know, safety, my security, my everything, this little shell of, you know, fear, to sort of dissolve that a bit, let it weaken and crack, and step out from that little shell and see that we're all connected. We don't have to be supremely enlightened. This is our practice of awakening, right here in this body and mind, in this moment, right here in these little ways. We're practicing the Buddha's teaching of enlightenment, awakening. We can do it right now, right here, very simple. And we can trust that they will help us, that they do help us, help those around us, and help our world. As it was in the time of the Buddha, so it is today. And that's our talk for the day. Thank you.